This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus aureus by warming your synapses with regenerative radio waves. This warms your brain to a crispy and crunchy 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Lisa? Can you feel it?
Yeah, I can feel it.
Nice. And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCAT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCAT.org. And I am Lou, and I'm joined by Lisa DeLascio of Nutritional Anarchy. And tonight we're going to be talking, for the most part, about the war on drugs, a.k.a. no cartel or police agency left behind, because that's essentially what that program has been, or the war on the American public. So
yeah, that is what it is.
Lisa,
war on health.
Yeah. You've done a tremendous amount of research on cannabis as far as health implications, and also, is it pronounced kratom?
I say kratom, and that's, kratom, that's how I've always kratom. Heard it pronounced. Yeah.
Okay.
It does. It looks like kratom, but
yeah. Well, I have no idea what it is, but anyway. So yeah, there's been a lot of what's the word that I'm looking for? Scumbaggery on the part of government agencies and control freaks with their control freakiness, trying to regulate and control different things that have medicinal purposes, trying to regulate plants. If these idiots are going to declare war on a plant, why can't it be poison ivy?
I would be down with that. No, I've had poison ivy once in my life, and it was awful.
I would be down with it also, but the war on poison ivy would be just like the war on cannabis. It would be everywhere, and it would finally have a street value. It would finally.
That's true.
Poison ivy would be monetized if the government declared war on it. I don't know how or why. I just think that it would happen. But anyway,
they would find a way.
Now, actually, you probably see a lot more of it, and the reason being is there was where was it? I almost want to say it was India. There was some place where they had a problem with cobras, I think it was. And I'm pretty sure it was India. But anyway, the government said, okay, we have this cobra problem, so we have to solve this. So they started offering a bounty for cobras. You know, they said, hey, you kill this cobra, you bring it to us, we'll give you some money. And people being capitalistic-minded, people that look at a situation and see a way to make it better for themselves, they decided that they were going to start raising cobras. So they went into mass production of cobras. You know, you had a little cobra factory and everything else. And people are raising these cobras and reproducing them. And you got cobra farms and ranches all over the place. And cobra wranglers, cobra boys instead of cowboys, and they're raising these cobras to take them in to get the bounty for killing them.
You're kidding me.
No, it's wow. It's a true story.
Truth is stranger than fiction. That's so bizarre.
Yeah, but what it comes down to is you got these control freaks. You got these control freaks that think that, hey, I can make a declaration and people are going to obey and nothing silly is going to come out of it. And we are back. apparently, we both got drone being in different locations. So simultaneous drone strike.
That's not at all suspicious.
No, not at all. Especially since we're talking about important stuff tonight. So anyway,
yeah,
cobras, raising cobras and getting government payoffs. So would that be considered farm subsidies?
Probably.
So anyway, tonight is going to be the Lisa show for the most part, because you're going to be leading us on this little adventure, and we're going to be covering what, the history of the DEA, the history of cannabis, kratom, what else?
Medicinal plants, anything that's good for us. they don't want us to have. This is why we can't have nice things. Anything good comes along and they have to stop it. Yeah. No, we can't. You can't. Are you kidding me? It reminds me of that meme, you know, with the people who want to do these voluntary transactions and hold on a minute. We need to be involved in this. You know, we can't have people, you know, taking their own health into their own hands and taking responsibility for themselves. They have to have a part of this. And as with anything government, they make things worse for everybody. You know, how many people are in locked in cages over the use of harmless plants, beneficial plants. I don't even like to say harmless. They're beneficial plants. So kratom is the next victim. Back right, on August 30th. Mm-hmm.
So give us a little rundown of what kratom is and what it does and all that other stuff for the people that really have no idea about it. And I'm kind of one of them.
Okay, so I hadn't heard of kratom either until a couple of months ago when this all came out. It's gone under the radar for a long time. It's just another plant that people have been using for hundreds of years. And it is a tree native to Southeast Asia. It's a relative of the coffee plant, and it's been used as a stimulant. Yeah, I know. I'm very curious about it. I've never tried it, but now I want to, of course, because when the government says you can't have it, I'm like, oh, no, I have to have it now. Kind of like little kids when you say not to touch something and they want to touch it. I'm like, no, now I need to have it. But it's used as a stimulant, and a lot of people say it really increases their productivity, makes them really get stuff done, helps them focus like coffee does. And also it can be used to help you relax. And one of the big benefits of this plant is it's used to manage chronic pain without the side effects and the risk of addiction that opiate drugs carry. What's really special about kratom is it can be used. It has chemicals that bind to some of the same receptors as opioids, but you don't get a high from it. So it may make you feel good and have energy, but you don't get the high that you would from opiate drugs. And it can be used to treat opioid addiction as well. So of course, this plant, you know, has a history of being safe. You know, I think the DEA is claiming that there have been 14 or 15 deaths related to it in the last like 10 years or so. But when you look deeper into those cases, those deaths, it turns out the people were doing other things in addition to kratom. They've never proven that kratom itself has caused death, ever. So that's just another unsubstantiated claim that the government's making because they want to crack down on this plant. So this plant poses a big threat to pharmaceutical companies. And in turn, the FDA and the DEA, because it can be used not only to replace opiate drugs, but also to treat opiate addiction. So you see where I'm going with this.
Really? So it,
yeah.
So what you're saying is, the qualities that it has that alleviates pain, they're non-addictive, they're safer than the opiates, and aren't mm-hmm. opiates mostly synthetic now?
They are, and they cause a lot of deaths. They've also been linked to the heroin epidemic, the addiction epidemic that we have in the U.S. now, because what happens is people are given opiate drugs by prescription, and then when doctors say, whoa, okay, I think you're hooked on this, I can't keep you on this for a long time, you know, it's time for us to wean you off, people still want that high, or they want the pain relief, so they turn to heroin because it's cheaper and easier to get than prescription opioids. So we now have an addiction crisis that a lot of experts are linking to overprescribing of opiate drugs. So this plant can alleviate both of those problems. People can use this a lot more safely than they would an opiate drug.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to jump in for a second. Going to what you're talking about with the pain relief and everything. When I was in the homeless shelter, I met this young guy. He was a veteran from Afghanistan, and he had taken a bullet to the back, but it didn't go in because he had his vest on, and it didn't penetrate the plate back there. But he wound up having really bad back injuries after all his time over there, because one, he's running around with a full rucksack most of the time, and you got a lot of weight there, and it's not exactly the most ergonomically friendly environment for running around with a rucksack. Mm-hmm. And throw in the fact of getting shot, and that never really helps things too much.
No.
But anyway, when he was stationed stateside, I believe up in Alaska or something like that, they were just giving him what we refer to as grunt candy, ibuprofen. So whatever injury you have, here, have some ibuprofen. It's kind of like the Chris Rock routine about taking Robitussin. If you got a broken leg, rub some Robitussin on it. But anyway, that's what military doctors do, is they give you ibuprofen. And you think that the military owns stock in ibuprofen. But anyway, so he had really bad back pain, and I think for a little while he got like oxy or something like that, one of those opiate type things, and just like you're talking about, he got cut off. So he wound up going out and getting heroin to manage his pain.
Aw.
And he wound up getting kicked out of the military and wound up homeless and numerous issues that went along with it. He's really, really a mess.
That's really sad. It's everything's so backwards. It's, I mean, that's. It sounds like he could have used kratom and/or cannabis.
You know, and not being in the military.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, for sure. Gosh, it's, so if you really go down the rabbit hole and look deeply at all this, it's all linked and related.
If you look at the root cause of it, it is the government wanting to meddle in Afghanistan and everything else. Now, don't get me wrong. When it comes to 9/11 attacks, and I'm going to put on my mini status dunce cap here. yes, a response to that is legitimate, but
sure.
At what, you know, how far does it go?
Yeah.
How long does a country have to be occupied?
And now it's escalated and spread to other places, because I see those things as a vicious cycle. You know, you can't end war with more war.
All right. And we will be back with more of the Lisa DeLascia Show.
Oh.
After this trip to the market. Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hi, have you heard about Bitcoin? Not Bitcoin, but Bipcoin. Bravo, India, Papa, Coin. Bipcoin is a new cryptocurrency that you can start mining today for free on ordinary computers. Unlike most altcoins, Bipcoin is not a clone of Bitcoin. Bipcoin is based on entirely new, more recent, and better code called CryptoNote. So unlike Bitcoin, Bipcoin has truly untraceable transactions, does not require specialized mining rigs, and has adaptive limits. Plus, Bipcoin is the only cryptocurrency covered by the BIPCOT no government license. This allows use and reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. If you're still kicking yourself in the head for not getting in on the ground floor of Bitcoin, start mining, using, and trading Bipcoin today.
Not a guarantee.
Mining Bipcoin costs you nothing but the electricity to run your computer. And we already take Bipcoin for stickers and buttons. Go to Bipcoin.org. That's Bipcoin.org. Once again, that's Bravo, India, Papa, Coin.org.
Freedom Fiends. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Lisa, and we are discussing the war on drugs. No cartel or police agency left behind. Lisa,
the war on the people.
Tell us how you really feel about the DEA.
I hate them with the fire of a thousand suns.
Nice. And tell us what exactly they're doing with this beneficial plant. And right now we're talking about kratom.
We are, yeah. So there's a little interesting timeline here that I want to mention first. On August 11th of this year, the DEA announced for the fourth time that it wouldn't reclassify marijuana. So currently cannabis is under Schedule 1, the DEA's scheduling, and it's been there since 1970. And I'll talk about the history of that in a little while. So on August 31st, the DEA announced that it was going to put kratom under Schedule 1 also. What's really, really bad about Schedule 1 is it makes it very hard to do research on a medicinal plant or a substance. Schedule 1 is the only category of controlled substances that may not be prescribed by a physician. So doctors can't even say, you know what, like, I think this plant would be good for you to treat your PTSD or depression or whatever you've got going on, your pain. They can't even prescribe it legally. So in order to be placed in Schedule 1, a drug must meet three criteria. It has a high potential for abuse. The drug or other substance has no currently accepted medicinal use in for treatment of any kind in the U.S., and there's a lack of accepted safety for use of the drug or substance under medical supervision. Okay. So,
let me interrupt for a second. Define abuse, or what is their definition of abuse?
Their definition of abuse. Oh, that's a good question. I'm not quite sure. I think they mean a plant that has, I remember reading that it means a plant that has addictive qualities. So they something that's going to cause you to no longer have control over it. So you know, like opiates do.
So cannabis, people. Not addictive.
Right. It's not. And if you do a search on PubMed, you know, which is a website you can use to search for scientific studies, there are over 22,000 studies published already on marijuana, cannabis. So, and the government actually has patents on it. That's not a conspiracy theory. That's true. They've patented marijuana. So clearly they know that it has medicinal qualities. They just want to corner the market on it. They want to make it so that we can't grow this in our backyards. We can't just buy it from our neighbor. They want to make it so they are in control of it, is what I think this is leading to.
So they want to cut off the supply.
Yeah, they do. And cannabis was placed under Schedule One way back in 1970 by Congress, and it was supposed to be provisional. Because back then they didn't really know a lot about the plant. There hadn't been a lot of research done. In 1972, the National Commission on Marijuana and Drug Abuse released a report favoring decriminalization. They wanted to get it moved from Schedule One, completely off the schedule, decriminalized, let people use it if they want to. There was a report presented to Congress called Marijuana, a Signal of Misunderstanding, which favored ending prohibition. But the Nixon administration didn't care. They were like, no, we were just going to ignore that and just keep it, you know, we're going to keep this illegal. And I think we know why.
Yeah, well, with the cannabis being illegal, it's actually been illegal-ish. It's been federally regulated since, I believe, the year was 1936. I think that's when it went into effect. And essentially, I might be wrong on this, but the federal prohibition on cannabis, at least the origins of it, would be that it's legal to have it, but you have to have a tax stamp. You have to have it physically with you to get the tax stamp, but it's also illegal to transport it without the tax stamp. So in order to get the tax stamp, you would have to illegally take it with you, and you could be arrested for that. So essentially what it is, it's not illegal, it's just regulated to the point of if you have it, you're breaking the law because of taxes.
Right, yeah. There's a very long and detailed and crazy history associated with cannabis prohibition. The first commissioner of the DEA, which was back in 1930 called the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, was Harry Jacob Anslinger. And he was very, very, you know, anti-drug, very pro-cannabis prohibition. He is pretty much the person who's responsible for all this starting.
Okay. We'll cover that when we get back from this trip to the market. Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you tired of stinky socialists trying to take over America?
And are you also tired of theorists talking about the free market as a cure-all for every problem with no firsthand experience of how the market actually works?
Well, the Truth, Justice, American Way app gives you wall-to-wall shows by hosts who not only understand the market, but tell you how they make money in a variety of patriotic endeavors.
The Truth, Justice, American Way app for Android is 24/7 streaming audio content on the topics of finance, liberty, self-defense, and technology.
All the hosts are all American Americans from all over America.
And the app is made in Wyoming, the cowboy state.
Because you should buy American, even with free Android apps.
Truth, Justice, American Way. Useful information, compelling personalities, and superior American audio quality.
Go on the Google Play Store or the Amazon App Store and search Truth, Justice, American Way.
God bless each and every one of you, and God bless America.
I'm joined by Lisa, and we're talking about the DEA and the history of prohibition on cannabis, and more recently, the attempted criminalization of kratom. You're going from a couple of different articles, and in full disclosure, you wrote both of these articles. And I will link these in the show notes, but where can people find these particular articles? Because there's no way we're going to cover all the information that's in there tonight.
Yeah, they're both pretty long. One of them is on a website called Jake's Health Solutions. This one is called Prohibition, Politics, and Profit: The Truth Behind About Cannabis and Why Government Wants to Control It. And the other one I'm referring to is called, it's on nutritionalanarchy.com, and it's called Why Everyone Should Care About the Government's War on Cannabis and Kratom.
Nice. Okay, so let's continue on with the formation of the DEA. I believe you're talking about the first director was, his name was Anslinger?
Yes. Yeah, so he was, before he was against cannabis, he was for it, is what this, how the story goes. So prior to the end of alcohol prohibition, this guy claimed that cannabis was not a problem, didn't harm people, and there was no more absurd fallacy than the idea that it makes people violent. His critics argue that he shifted not due to objective evidence, but due to the obsolescence of the Department of Prohibition that he headed when alcohol prohibition ceased. So he was seeking something else to make illegal, something else that they could tax and make revenue from, as you referenced earlier, the Marijuana Tax Act that was passed in 1937.
And I'm going to interrupt. I have the Bureau of Prohibition Wikipedia thing here, and the description is, the Bureau of Prohibition, or Prohibition Unit, was a federal law enforcement agency formed to enforce the National Prohibition Act of 1919, commonly known as the Volstead Act, which backed up the 18th Amendment to the United States Constitution regarding the prohibition of the manufacture, sale, and transportation of alcoholic beverages. When it was first established in 1920, it was a unit in the Bureau of Internal Revenue. On April 1st, 1927, it became an independent entity within the Department of the Treasury, changing its name from the Prohibition Unit to the Bureau of Prohibition. In 1930, it became a part of the Department of Justice, Injustice. Hmm. By 1933, with the repeal of Prohibition, it was briefly absorbed into the FBI, or Bureau of Investigation, as it was then called, and became the Bureau's Alcohol Beverage Unit, though for practical purposes, it continued to operate as a separate agency. Very shortly after that, once repeal became a reality and the only federal laws regarding alcoholic beverages being their taxation, it was switched back to Treasury, where it was renamed the Alcohol Tax Unit. And there's one thing in here that I really like. Oh, by the way, I'm getting the idea that the Untouchables, you know, Elliot Ness, that story was part of this unit. But anyway, public perception. In the public opinion, the Bureau agents were not perceived as positive people. Bureau agents were supposedly notorious for killing civilians that were caught in the middle of gunfights between them and bootleggers. Also, the general public did not like the fact that Bureau agents were able to wiretap phones. Many cases have been reported of civilians lashing out at agents, such as a woman scratching an agent in his face after he pointed his gun at her. With the passing of the Jones Act, tensions rose even further as prohibition agents were now able to launch full-scale war on illegal speakeasies. This, in conjunction with local police, ended up raising the tensions of civilians in cities such as Chicago and New York due to the numerous bootleggers inhabiting those cities. So they've always been an enemy occupation force. They've always felt that the ends justify the mean, and citizen is just a euphemism for slave. Do as you're told.
Yeah, it really is. It's really tragic, the results of all of this. I mean, starting with alcohol prohibition and then going with cannabis. If you think about how many people are in jail and some have spent decades in jail because of mandatory minimum sentencing, you know, for something as small as having a little bit of a medicinal plant on their person.
So in order to keep the jobs of these folks that worked in the Bureau of Prohibition, and in order for them to have something to do after the prohibition of alcohol was repealed, they started looking for new things to ban, right?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly how it goes. Mm-hmm.
Because that would have overwhelmed the dishwashing and landscaping industry with all those cops being put out on the streets unemployed. Because that's that's the jobs that they're suited for.
Yeah, it really is.
So, anyway, all right, I'm done interrupting. Go back to talking trash about these scumbags.
Yeah, something I'm very concerned about on this note is the DEA right now, in response to supposedly a lot of outcry about their attempt to put Kratom under Schedule 1. You know, there were a lot of activists. There was a big lawsuit from some manufacturers and stores that sell Kratom who said, hey, you know what? You're going to put us out of business. You're going to bankrupt us, you know, if you make this Schedule 1. There were researchers who have been studying Kratom for a while who said, oh, you know, now that if you make this Schedule 1, it makes research very difficult. So here's the vicious cycle these things get caught in. Okay. They'll put them under Schedule 1 because they'll say, we don't have enough research to show that these plants are safe for use. We don't have enough research showing that they have any medicinal qualities. But putting them under Schedule 1 makes research really difficult, if not impossible. Cannabis, for example, being under Schedule 1, there I think are maybe two, I can't remember how many, one or two places where researchers can get cannabis for studies legally. So if you're a researcher and you want to study cannabis, you only can get it from one of these government approved places, growers.
And there's a friend of the show who is like some science guy, mm-hmm. Kevin McKernan, and he's actually worked on some of these different, mapping the genome of cannabis or something like that. I can't really remember. But anyway, and we're not just talking about some like guy in some backwoods lab or something like that cooking meth. And we're talking about a guy who's actually met with Clinton, and he's actually up there, so real science guy, and he's worked on this stuff, and he's been a very strong advocate for cannabis decriminalization and everything else, and just letting this beneficial plant be used.
Right. A lot of scientists are really excited about it. You know, cannabis, kratom, you know, and some other plants too. And MDMA, I mean, there's an organization called MAPS, and they actually do research on psychedelic drugs. They do some cannabis research. They are one of the non-profit organizations they're probably the front runner right now. They're able to, they've got some influence. They've got a lot of donations. They're able to obtain these drugs for studies, but they've been doing some really promising research on psilocybin, which is, you know, magic mushrooms as we know them. MDMA, which, you know, on the street is called ecstasy, but if you buy it on the street, it might not necessarily be pure MDMA, but they're finding that a lot of these things really can be life changing for people who have PTSD and other ailments that are really hard to treat with pharmaceuticals or with therapy. So yeah, a lot of scientists are all for all of this, but the government keeps getting in their way. And it's got to be really discouraging to be one of those people. You know, you've put a lot of effort and time into this, and you start to make a breakthrough and show that these things can help people. And then boom, government comes in and says, nope, sorry, we can't have that. We can't have people having these things because the FDA and the DEA are not going to make any money off of this.
It's really interesting, though, the protectionist angle of it, as far as these agencies just protecting existing, like, pharmaceutical companies and everything else. A couple stories that I can relate to from up here where I live in Bear Saskatchewan. I'm in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. It's basically the middle of nowhere. People look at the map and say, are you sure that's not Canada? And there was a fairly well-known college sports ball coach that's from here. Actually, I think there's a couple of them. But anyway, one of them wanted to open up a chain restaurant, like an Applebee's or something like that. And the local restaurant owners went to the city government, you know, the central planning committees and said, if they open up this restaurant, that's going to put us out of business, doing the typical, you know, they took our gerbs.
Oh, gosh.
Nonsense. But the reality is, if these existing restaurants can't compete, if they get shut down because another restaurant came in, then they probably shouldn't be there in the first place because they're obviously not that good. When given the option to go somewhere else, people choose to go somewhere else. So, yeah, your restaurant sucks, and the only reason it's still open is because there's a lack of options. But anyway, so I mean, that's one particular example of local businesses using government to crush competition. There's another one. I was over in an even smaller town area. We're talking a little dinky area, big time. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to the guy in the sporting goods store, and this guy's been there since I was a kid. And he's talking about how there's the Chamber of Commerce in a couple different counties is begging for a road to be paved. And he says, if they pave that road out there, that's going to kill our business because nobody's going to drive through this town and blah, 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 and all sort of stuff. And I'm thinking, let's see now. You have stores there. You have places to engage in commerce. Yes, people will have to, you know, people will be able to drive on a paved road after that. So he's actually fighting against Morodes. He's using government to fight Morodes.
Oh my goodness.
And as a matter of fact, the town that I grew up in, there was a big shopping mall that was slotted to go in that town, right in the center of that town. And the city fathers, the business owners said, oh, nope, can't do that because that'll destroy our businesses too. And what wound up happening was it was put in probably, I don't know, maybe 5 miles away, something like that. And I remember watching that place get built up. I remember the evolution of that area because it went from fields and farms and all that other stuff to having movie theaters, restaurants, and all sorts of stores around the mall across the street. It was a major center of commerce. As a matter of fact, I even worked in that mall cooking at a restaurant back in high school.
Wow.
And by the way, my hometown went from blue collar to no collar. It went from blue collar to wearing a wife beater.
Good grief.
But they protected their local business.
I'm just sitting here shaking my head right now. I'm really not surprised, but.
So sorry for interrupting yet again.
No, it's okay. I can get on a roll on this topic because it's near and dear to my heart. So.
All right, that's the end of the segment. We'll be right back with maybe a little lighthearted redemption.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgoristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agorist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, go with AgoristHosting.com.
Freedom Fiends. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Lisa. And we're going to take a little break from the DEA and the doing everything asinine agency. and we're going to talk about some what's the proper way of putting it? The violence of the state is being projected back upon its violence inflictors. And this is in your area. And this is just absolutely, I'm absolutely befuddled by it. As somebody who has absolutely zero expectations of intelligence out of government, I'm even shocked at the stupidity of this. So anyway, out in your area, the headline for this one here, and this comes from the Capital Gazette. Anne Arundel police investigate officer who displayed Oathkeeper's hat in cruiser.
My goodness, the horrors.
Yeah. This is by Ben Weathers, Contact Reporter. And after reading this article, I think it was yesterday I came across it. He is not a very good reporter, because as far as getting information and doing research, it's my opinion that he was extremely lazy and probably a flaming leftist socialist based upon his sources. So anyway, Jillian Thompson had parked her car Monday afternoon and was walking into the Whole Foods at the Annapolis Town Center afternoon when she spotted the hat propped up in the back window of an Anne Arundel County police cruiser. Was a tan cap with yellow letters, Oath Keepers.
Dun, dun, oh, dun, no.
Thompson, a stay-at-home mother of four from Crownsville, on her way to pick up some lunch, was shocked.
So silly.
The Oath Keepers bills itself as a nonpartisan organization composed of current and former military who vowed to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. The group's actions are often described as anti-government and controversial, landing it on the radars of hate watch groups such as the Soviet Policy Lie Center and the Anti-Defamation League. So that's his source, is the Soviet Policy Lie Center and the ADL. Really? That's your source? They're not anti-government. They're very pro-government because they love the Constitution. The Constitution that creates a government. The Constitution that allegedly authorizes these politicians to tax and borrow and inflict government on everybody else. So, yeah, they're very pro-government. They defend the Constitution that created this piece of garbage government.
Yeah, and anyway, I'm sitting here seeing the anti-government part, and I'm like, what's wrong with that? Good.
Yeah. Now, there's also reference to them showing up in Ferguson, and being that they are pro-government, they went out and they were helping to protect private property, businesses specifically. So when the rioters were going around and burning down cell phone stores and looting because they were mad at government, if government pisses you off, you're entitled to a new TV and maybe a new set of kicks. But anyway,
crazy.
So they were out there guarding these stores, and when the police were firing tear gas at peaceful protesters exercising their right to redress grievances as listed in the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution and also Chapter 5, Article 67 of the North Korean Constitution, where were the Oath Keepers? They weren't there. And as the press was exercising its First Amendment right to report, you know, that freedom of the press, and they're being shot with tear gas and rubber bullets, and there's videotape of that happening. Where were the Oath Keepers? They weren't there. So they're not anti-government because they allowed all this tyranny to happen. Mm-hmm, you know, as these people are getting gassed, I just picture some patriotic person saying, "Oath Keepers, where are you? You're our only hope." But anyway, The person that reported it, I went to her Facebook page, and it was just an absolute Schumer show. Show us on the doll where the Oath Keeper's hat touched you.
Yeah, and incidentally, she's triggered.
Oh, she's triggered hard. And the officer has been suspended pending further investigation. So, paid vacation, didn't even have to kill anybody.
Oh.
We will be back, second hour, and we'll be ragging on the DEA and the Department of Making Everything Ungood. Worms.
Worms.
Thank you. The Freedom Fiends now have a free app for your Android phone, tablet, phablet, or other chromed robot turd, available now from the Google Play Store, Amazon, and FreedomFiends.com. Lovingly handcrafted by head hamster Michael W. Dean, the artisanal Freedom Fiends radio app allows you to listen live, keep up with the podcast, chat directly with other fiends, get discounts on bigger buttons, brainwash yourself with a 24/7 random episode, and so much more. You know the Freedom Fiends is the best libertarian radio show in the world, but when the fiends aren't live, you can use the app to listen to LRN.FM from anywhere. The Freedom Fiends radio app is like having a virtual libertarian re-education camp in your pocket. It's your gateway to the exclusive, high-demand group that is the Freedom Fiends. Install the Freedom Fiends radio Android app today. It's free, and of course, it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. Tell two friends, review it on Google Play and Amazon, prepare for the inevitable death of terrestrial radio, and get ready for LibPair with the Freedom Fiends radio app for Android. Worms. Worms.
Through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. I am Lou, and I'm joined by Lisa DeLascio, and we are talking about the DEA, the Doing Everything Asinine Agency, part of the Department of Making Everything Ungood, the U.S. government, and the War on Drugs, a.k.a. No Cartel or Police Agency Left Behind. And before we get into all the different things, what I want to explain about the meaning of No Cartel or Police Agency Left Behind, what the War on Drugs, what Prohibition itself does, and it doesn't matter if it's the Prohibition of cannabis, heroin, cocaine, or alcohol back in the early 20th century, or literature that is deemed as subversive and improper in the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc countries. It doesn't matter what it is. Even the ban on the importation of lace into France in the late 1700s, or the importation of wool into England in the same time period. All these things do is they create illicit markets that create the environment for the cartels to thrive. So it's actually a jobs program. It's a money-making program. It's a stimulus project for the cartels, for the crime syndicates, all these people. And of course, as far as the police agencies go, well, you gotta be armed to the teeth to fight them. Oh, and by the way, when you're not raiding people's house for having a plant, you also have the armaments and the equipment, the bearcats and all that other stuff. And you could go do a SWAT raid on a poker game or take down a little girl's lemonade stand. So aww, that's what I mean by the War on Drugs, a.k.a. No Cartel or Police Agency Left Behind. It funds two different crime syndicates, cops and cartels. But anyway, yes. So we were talking earlier, and if you could give a little rundown on Kratom, and you also think that the DEA is eventually going to just completely ban it. Explain that.
Yeah, I do. Because on August 30th, that's back when the DEA announced that it intended to put Kratom on Schedule 1. And there was a lot of outcry. There were petitions, you know, sent to the White House. And I guess the procedure is, if there's a 100,000 signatures on a petition, the White House supposedly has to look at it. I don't know if they did. I haven't really heard them say much about this. But there have been a lot of people in Congress who have said, wait a minute, you know, banning Kratom? No, let's not do this. Like, the people are saying this plant has been life-saving for them. You know, hold on a minute. Let's not be so hasty to ban this plant. So there have been some politicians who have been, you know, sticking up for us little guys here. And, you know, scientists have even been protesting this, saying, wait a minute, you know, we've been doing research on this plant and we think it's showing a lot of promise. And, you know, could you please not ban it? Because you're going to make our research, you know, get completely stopped, if not slowed down. So a lot of people were really protesting this, and the DEA, shockingly, you know, initially I was like, whoa, okay, this is actually kind of impressive. On October 12th, the DEA said, you know what, we're going to put off the scheduling. We're going to leave Kratom alone for now. Well, turns out they have an open public comment period from now until December 1st, so people can share their experiences using Kratom as a medical treatment. But here's the twist. They've requested that the FDA expedite scientific research. Now, the problem with this is now, since they're bringing the FDA into this, I think it's all just for show. I think the DEA and the FDA are absolutely planning to ban Kratom, because the FDA still will not acknowledge that even cannabis has any medicinal qualities. Here's what the FDA's official stance is on cannabis. I'm going to read this to you. The FDA has not approved any product containing or derived from botanical marijuana for any indication. This means that the FDA has not found any such product to be safe or effective for the treatment of any disease or condition. The FDA is aware that marijuana or marijuana-derived products are being used for a number of medical conditions, including, for example, AIDS wasting, epilepsy, neuropathic pain, treatment of spasticity associated with MS, and cancer and chemotherapy-induced nausea. To date, the FDA has not approved a marketing application for a drug product containing or derived from botanical marijuana and has not found any products to be safe or effective for any indication. So if you notice, they dodge the actual issue here. They won't admit that cannabis is safe and effective, but they won't come out and say it isn't either. So they use very specific language there. And the FDA has a history of cracking down on companies that make and sell natural, you know, botanical products. They don't like the supplement industry. They don't like any kind of natural remedies. They've cracked down on health food. And the reason I believe this is because these kind of companies and, you know, cannabis plants that you can just grow in your own backyard pose a massive threat to the FDA, the DEA, and to pharmaceutical companies. Because the FDA has a drug approval process that costs companies millions of dollars to go through. So if you're a little guy and you have this plant or this remedy that you've come up with that you want to get FDA approval, it's going to cost you, and it's going to cost you a lot. Since 1992, the FDA has collected almost $8 billion in these fees. So you have to pay them to get approved.
Yep.
So I think... go ahead. Sorry.
So, no, go ahead. Tell us what you think.
Oh, I think that the FDA is going to say, nope, Kratom's no good. They're not going to do any research on it. There's no benefit to them to do this. They're not going to make any money off of this. They stand to profit much more if it's not legalized.
Well, when you say profit, you mean get revenue to sustain themselves.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're not going to be able to sustain themselves, or they're not going to be able to pay off their lobbyists or whatever.
Isn't that where a lot of their funding comes from, is the fees to get medicines approved?
Yeah, that's exactly. They've made about $8 billion in those fees since 1992. It's extremely expensive to get a product approved by them. And so get this. Here's what the FDA has approved, okay? There are two synthetic drugs called Marinol and Syndros, okay? They've approved both of those for therapeutic uses in the U.S. for the treatment of anorexia associated with weight loss in AIDS patients. They include synthetic THC, which is considered the psychoactive component of cannabis. And then there's another drug they've also approved, which has a chemical structure similar to THC. Now, the companies that make these products have spent millions on lobbying. One of them has spent $4.3 million so far on lobbying this year alone. And so as you can see, there's that whole, you know, like I said, follow the money. You know, these companies that are making these synthetic products that are far inferior to cannabis are getting approved because money.
So what you're saying is rather than taking something natural that they can't charge a whole lot of money for, but there's also not a whole lot of cost of producing it, and there is an awful lot of competition because anybody can grow a weed. I mean, it literally is a weed.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying is because if they eliminate that competition, they can make more money by creating something artificial than using something natural.
Exactly. And the thing that's bad about this is the natural medicinal plants are unique in that they have their active compounds in them, like THC or cannabis, you know, all of the different components in cannabis and even in hemp and other medicinal plants that work together to provide benefits. When you try to isolate these and create synthetic versions of them, a lot of times they're not as effective and they have side effects. You know, all of the constituents are made to work together in a plant. That's so
now look,
there's that too.
you sound like one of these anti-science people rubbing like leaves and stuff on you and all that other junk, because everybody knows that aloe, you know, like the aloe plant, that lotion isn't really effective. It's not until you go into a lab and you introduce science and you create a synthetic version of aloe vera. That's how you take care of sunburns, because this natural stuff, oh no, I mean, that's inferior because science. You know, I'm making fun of certain people there because they view science as their religion, and they say, well, literally, they say, oh, well, how's a plant going to do this? Well, a plant is something that you eat on a regular basis if you're eating your vegetables and your fruits and everything else. And hey, it has these healthful nutritional capacities to it. It provides these things that human bodies need. So why can't plants be medicinal as well as food?
Yeah, exactly. That's such a good point. And, you know, to people who would say that about me in particular, and I've come up against that argument before, is I have a Bachelor of Science in Health Sciences. I did study this in school. I did complete most of a Master's in Nutrition Sciences too. So I'm not just some layperson who's, you know, going around saying like, oh, because natural doesn't always mean safe either. I mean, there are plants that will kill you.
Can't be as natural, but I'm not going to drink it.
Right, exactly. There are plants. An example of that is digitalis, the plant. If you eat that plant, it will kill you. But they do extract certain components from that plant to make some cardiac drugs. So to me, it's important to have balance and to weigh everything. I mean, these opiate drugs, they have benefit. There are cases where people need to be prescribed opiates, but they've been way over prescribed, especially in recent years. And I don't know. I mean, I think some of that is pharmaceutical companies educating physicians and saying, hey, you know what? And actually that's a whole nother topic for another night, maybe, but there were some documents, you know, unveiled recently that showed that the pharmaceutical industry did heavily influence the overprescribing of opiates.
Oh, I have absolutely no doubt.
Yeah.
And we'll be back with more of the war on the American public by the government, the department making everything ungood, after this trip to the market.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
This is Lou, and I'm joined by Lisa, and we are talking about the war on drugs, a.k.a. No Cartel or Police Agency Left Behind. And what do you call it?
Oh, me, I just say that I hate them with the fire of a thousand suns.
Yeah, but you call it like the war on the American people or something.
Oh,
like that,
yeah. It's definitely the war on people, the war on health, for sure.
The war on freedom.
Yeah, it really is ultimate war on freedom. And to think that the government or politicians or legislators or whatever, to think that they dictate what people can and can't put in their bodies is so absurd to me. I mean, the more you think about that, the more crazy it is, right? They're going to tell us what we can use in the privacy of our own homes, you know, to handle our health issues.
Yeah, it's control freaks and the control freakiness. But here's something else. You have all these different groups that are telling you this is what you can do. If you violate the things that we give you the permission to do, we will send people with guns. It used to be men with guns, but now in the name of equality, a woman can kick in your door and shoot your dog just as easy as a man can.
Yep.
But anyway, if you don't do exactly as you are told, you will suffer the consequences. And that could include being locked in a cage. That could include being stripped of your money or your home, your property. That could include being beaten. That could include being killed, dead, your cold, lifeless body just laying there because you were disobedient to government. Oh, and by the way, they are the public servants.
Right.
They're your servants. But if you don't obey your servants, they will kill you. What other relationship do the servants bark the orders and mete out punishment for disobedience?
Yeah, it's definitely slavery.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, it's just, I can't, it's so absurd to me, and I don't understand how everyone doesn't see this. Everyone.
But it's free range slavery. It's not chattel slavery anymore. It's free range.
They give you just enough so that there's an illusion, you know, unless you're aware of what's going on, you're really paying attention. You have just enough freedom to make you think that you have choice. I mean, you know, people right now saying, oh, you know, like, talking about voting, for example, I'm like, how
we
is
have
it
a
we
choice.
Have two
we could
people?
Go with Trump,
that's not a choice, yeah. Right? Not a choice at all. And if you point that out to people who are really clinging to that dogma, then they get really shaken up by it and get really mad at you.
There's a cartoon, and it's making fun of North Korea because there's only one candidate in the North Korean elections, and then it shows some flag-waving idiot saying, yeah, in a free country, you get to choose between two rulers, not one.
And that makes a really good point. I need to grab that one and send it to some people.
So, speaking of legislators, control freaks, and other idiots, tell me why Nixon is a horrible man.
Yeah, the history of cannabis prohibition is really, really dirty and nasty, and it's horrible. So marijuana, as we were saying earlier, was placed on Schedule 1 in 1971 provisionally. It was supposed to be a temporary thing until the science could be sorted out and assessed. But Nixon saw pot prohibition as a way to destroy the anti-war left, according to some recordings made by him in the White House, as well as statements from his staff to the press. This was reported on by Scientific American in an excellent article about this issue.
Not only did it go after the anti-war left, it also went after blacks.
Yeah, and I was going to get to that too. It's very racist in nature. Nixon convened the National Commission on Marijuana and Drug Abuse, which later became known as the Schaefer Commission, to engineer scientific support for cannabis being scheduled on Schedule 1. I want a strong statement on marijuana, he said in tapes from 1971. Can I get that, I can't say this word on the radio, domestic counsel? I mean, one on marijuana that just tears the something out of them. So in 1972, that Schaefer Commission found that cannabis was just as safe as alcohol and recommended ending prohibition in favor of a public health approach. But by then, the Federal Bureau of Narcotics had been removed from the Treasury Department and merged into the U.S. Department of Justice. Injustice, as I call it. Yeah. Where Nixon's ally, Attorney General John Mitchell, placed cannabis in Schedule 1, the same year that he resigned to head Nixon's reelection committee. This is a guy who later stood trial over the Watergate scandal and spent 19 months in jail for conspiracy, perjury, and obstruction of justice.
But all those charges were related to the election and not to his actual actions of making the country a worse place. We'll be back. Well,
more on that in a minute.
You said moron.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Do you want to make money working at home? Join the high-stakes world of selling BIPCOT NoGov merchandise. The BIPCOT No Government License is licensed under the BIPCOT No Government License, which means that you can go to BIPCOT.org, download the high-res logos, and make your own BIPCOT No Government merchandise to sell. The best part is you keep all the profits. And if you send a picture and mail a sample to the good people at BIPCOT.org, they might even help you promote it for free.
As long as you're not a government or a government agent and you don't advocate for any governments in any way.
Help promote liberty, make money, have fun, meet interesting people, be the envy of all your friends. Be the coolest kid at Fiendfest Somalia. Laugh at the state while it collapses, all while making and selling your own BIPCOT.org merchandise. What will you design? Get creative. Lots of folks are doing it, but there's always room for more. There are BIPCOT t-shirts, flags, drink cozies, turntable mats, BIPstrong bracelets, BIPCOT stickers, playing cards, and even Glock pistol backplates. You might even get mentioned on the Freedom Fiends. You're still kicking yourself for missing out on the start of Bitcoin. Don't miss out on BIPCOT. Get in on the ground floor now.
Not a guarantee.
Start your new life today at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org.
Freedom Fiends. Welcome back. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Lisa, and we're talking about the war on drugs, no cartel or police agency left behind, and currently talking about why Nixon is a horrible, evil, evil man.
Very. Yeah, this shocked me.
Mm-hmm. By today's standards, he's not a crook.
There's so much blame to be placed upon him for all of this. A lot of what's been going on now, it's had really, really long-term, horrible ramifications. Back in 1994, Nixon aide John Ehrlichman told journalist Dan Baum, "Do you want to know what this is really all about?" referring to cannabis prohibition. The Nixon campaign in 1968 and the Nixon White House after that had two enemies, the anti-war left and black people. You understand what I'm saying? We knew we couldn't make it illegal to either be against the war or black, but by getting the public to associate the hippies with marijuana and the blacks with heroin and then criminalizing both heavily, we could disrupt those communities. We could arrest their leaders, raid their homes, break up their meetings, and vilify them night after night on the evening news. Did we know we were lying about the drugs? Of course we did.
Damn.
That's chilling, isn't it?
And something else, it wasn't illegal to be a Jew in Nazi Germany. It's just there were a lot of laws that were tailored around Jews.
Yeah.
So
sad, isn't it?
Not really that much different between the Nixon regime and the Hitler regime, except I don't think that American blacks or hippies were put into gas chambers.
Right. Yeah, but their lives have just been ruined in other ways. I mean, the ramifications of all of this, I mean, imprisoning innocent, nonviolent people, thousands of them. And as we referred earlier, you know, to the mandatory minimums that a lot of states have for even just possessing, you know, a small amount of cannabis and other drugs, the high taxpayer burdens, we're the ones, the taxpayers are the ones who pay for all of this. We pay for all of it. Loss of jobs, ruined lives, infringements on personal freedom, all of those things. There's nothing good has come out of this at all. Nothing good.
I saw an article, and I believe, and this is a few years ago, I believe that the cost of the war on drugs has totaled over $1 trillion. If you get really into it and really dig and maybe add on a few things that they're not the direct cost of the war on drugs, but they're costs of the collateral damage caused by it. The war on drugs, collateral damage and friendly fire. But if you add in all these additional costs from the collateral damage and friendly fire, it's possible that it could be over $2 trillion has been thrown down the rat hole of government to fund this war on plants and stuff.
Easily. There's an article from Forbes called On 420, It's High Time to Think About Taxes, Revenues, and Marijuana. And in there, they laid out all of the costs to society. And one of the points was taxpayers bear the burden of the cost, but not the revenue to stop them. Every year, the war on drugs costs U.S. taxpayers $51 million every year. In 2014, there were over 1.5 million arrests for drug violations in the U.S. Most of those, 83% of those were for possession, not dealing or distribution, just people who have it on their person for personal use. Roughly half of those were people who were arrested for possession of marijuana. And as of now, we've got, 2.2 million people in federal, state, and local prisons and jails, and you know, a lot of those are for nonviolent drug offenses.
Yeah. Now, there was a story not too long ago about police departments having rape kits gathering dust on the shelves, going untested. Meanwhile, they're throwing resources into doing marijuana busts.
Yep, there's that too. There's a serious backlog. Yep, that's true.
Was this one particular department? Was it numerous departments?
Let me see if I can find that information for you.
Okay.
Because I know I've heard about this.
Because here's the thing. Because the war on drugs is a moneymaker for police departments, and we've talked about the article several times that police steal more than all the burglars combined when you look at the civil asset forfeiture, which is, you know, I'm not one to talk about the magic parchment, but it's completely unmagic parchmentable because it requires the owner of the property to prove that the property is innocent versus the government to prove that it's guilty. So the whole burden of proof falls on the victim versus the persecution.
And yeah, that's true.
And because they use this money for their toys and for their little taking care of themselves, whatever you want to call it, that creates the incentive for them to work on drug busts. And because there are federal grants for making arrests of people with cannabis and for getting these convictions and all these other things, you get grant money for that. But what do you not get grant money for? What do you not get civil asset forfeiture and other financial rewards for? Solving crimes that have actual victims, people that have had actual demonstrable harm caused upon them. Because there's just no money in it.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So this whole nonsense about serve and protect is false advertisement. You know what? I wish the fraud laws applied to government agencies the way that they do private entities.
I do too.
And I wish that being politically connected wasn't enough to get you out of a bus for that. Yeah. But anyway, these scumbag welfare whore cops are going around and they're busting people for possession of a plant, possession of agriculture. Meanwhile, rape kits aren't getting checked and rape victims are not getting justice. But they're not really getting justice anyway because they're still gonna have to pay to have their attacker housed and clothed and fed and everything else. So, yeah. The whole injustice system is a cluster bleep. It's a cluster fine sign. It's horrible.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, even home break-ins and robberies and those things go unsolved because, as you were saying, there's no financial incentive.
Too.
Right. I mean, my house was broken into several years ago, and they pretty much told me, you should go around to the pawn shops in the area and see if you can find any of your items there. And I said, are you kidding me? Like, in this town, in this... You want me to go to the worst part of this city and go to pawn shops that have bars on the windows and where I'm probably going to get shot, and you want me to solve my own, okay.
You want me to investigate my own burglary?
Right, really? And I... I emailed a couple of pawn shops to ask, you know, I said, hey, I had some stolen property. I'm naive. I didn't know how these things, they don't want to know if they have stolen goods. I got yelled at by a couple of them. I got nasty emails in response saying, don't contact us and ask about this stuff. And I'm like, okay, I get it now. They don't care if the items are stolen. They want to sell them and make a profit. All right. So you're pretty much on your own. No. But oh my goodness, if you have a plant in your pocket, you're going down. And the DEA, they're going to keep, my theory is they'll always keep, they'll keep marijuana on Schedule One as long as they can. They run a domestic cannabis eradication and suppressive program that brings in big, big bucks. Big money. In 2015, federal spending on this program was $18 million. And the DEA makes it sound like this is some kind of noble endeavor. You know, they're like, oh, you know, this is, we're enhancing the already aggressive eradication of enforcement activities throughout the nation. And they have seized over $29 million worth of cultivator assets. So they're going around stealing people's stuff. The value of the assets that they've seized in 2014 alone was almost $28 million. They arrested 6,300 people.
Fiend phone.
Furries.
This is. Go ahead, Lou. What is it? Who is this? What am I? What am I doing?
You're doing furries. I don't know all the it's Feinsteining, it's unnecessary interruptions, rectal grabbing, don't grab on me, or something. I don't know what that is.
Universal service. I don't know what that is. That was pretty close. That was good. That was great. Yeah, I took my cats in naps, and as Lou would say,
oh, cats in napping.
With yeah. Your cats?
No, well, yeah, with one of them. But oh, I have kittens. Yeah, I know you're
only
kitten
one
drunk.
Of them? You're
crazy for kittens, aren't you, Lisa?
I do. I want three. I don't want every just time one. I want
every
like,
time I post. I want... get two kittens of the same age. That's the best.
Okay.
That yeah, then you have just one.
You can't eat just one, is what she said. Oh my God, you're horrible. That's funny. So
I need to have them.
I just woke up so I could come on air and say three things. One is Apple is horrible. Horrible. Absolutely horrible. So I find like everyone's been following this. Everyone has been following the saga of, so like, you know, I made an Android app for the Freedom Fiends like 6 months ago or something. And, you know, it took me two afternoons to program. And like, then I applied, then I paid $25 to join the Google developer program for life. Got approved in 10 minutes. Uploaded the app. 8 hours later, they uploaded it, it was on the store. And that's the end of the story. Apple, it's like, it cost me more to program. It took me longer. Had to jump through more hoops. Had to pay $99 a year to be an Apple developer. And finally jumped through all their hoops, and they turned my app down. The reasons they turned my app down were things that Android didn't care of. And I, for one, welcome our Google overlords. I hope if it's like the future, like all those great movies in the 70s, like Rollerball, where all the governments are replaced by a giant one world corporation eventually. I really hope it's Google and not Apple. Yeah, so the three things they turned it down for, it was basically that you could see a torrent link within the app. You know, in other words, like they think that I'm encouraging people to bootleg things, and I'm just encouraging people to share the Freedom Fiends. Like it's the torrent link for the Freedom Fiends, but they don't care. I couldn't explain that to them. Secondly, because within the app, you can see the Freedom Fiend site. You can see that sidebar where there's many links on it. And one of them happens to be a link to our Android app, which has a like little cartoony image of me talking to a microphone with the Android thing sitting on the microphone. That's no good. That's verboten. And then three was because I was accepting, donations within the app. So basically, I had to cripple it so all it does is play, which is the important stuff, but that basically the Freedom Fiends app can't link the Freedom Fiends site. That's what it comes down to. Thanks, Apple.
Oh, gosh.
Leftists always use Apple. Have you noticed that?
You're listening.
Sounds like your app is schedule one.
Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Hi, have you heard about Bipcoin? Not Bitcoin, but Bipcoin. Bravo, India, Papa, Coin. Bipcoin is a new cryptocurrency that you can start mining today for free on ordinary computers. Unlike most altcoins, Bipcoin is not a clone of Bitcoin. Bipcoin is based on entirely new, more recent, and better code called CryptoNote. So unlike Bitcoin, Bipcoin has truly untraceable transactions, does not require specialized mining rigs, and has adaptive limits. Plus, Bipcoin is the only cryptocurrency covered by the BIPCOT no government license. This allows use and reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. If you're still kicking yourself in the head for not getting in on the ground floor of Bitcoin, start mining, using, and trading Bipcoin today.
Not a guarantee.
Mining Bipcoin costs you nothing but the electricity to run your computer. And we already take Bipcoin for stickers and buttons. Go to Bipcoin.org. That's Bipcoin.org. Once again, that's Bravo, India, Papa, Coin.org.
Yeah.
Meow.
You know why? Here's another reason why I welcome our Google overlords. Because we were talking about the show image during the break, and I was like, what about that classic image everyone loves of the two guys in SWAT gear with rifles, the cops reaching out to pet a cat like it's gonna blow up. It's and they're not in a war zone. You know, I never even noticed this. There's two other cats in the background, like under cars. They're in Michigan or something, but not Detroit. You know, they're in like where 8 Mile grew up. That kind of place. You know that guy. So
Eminem.
So yeah, MM.
Yeah. Eight Mile grew up on Eminem.
Yes, on Eminem Road. So I went to find this picture, and I'll bet I could just search Google Images and search SWAT team petting kitten, and I missed the word team. I'm not awake, and I just typed SWAT petting kitten, and it was the second image that came up. I, for one, welcome our Google overlords. I found the image that quickly because it was on Google, not on Apple. That's what I think.
And not on Schedule One.
And not Schedule One. Yeah, I think Google and Amazon should run the world. I'd really like it if those two were in competition for everything.
This is a Schedule One meme. It's prohibited. You need a special tax stamp.
So speaking of more stuff I lose sleep doing for y'all listeners out there, please donate. Hashtag please donate. Oh, I had to take the donate link out of the Fiends app to resubmit it to Apple. And you have to pay to resubmit it. $25 each time. So so the other thing that we're doing for y'all is Bipcoin, not Bitcoin, but Bipcoin is back up and running. Go to bipcoin.org. Bravo, India, Papa, coin.org. It's the Freedom Fiends home brew cryptocurrency that works now and stays in consensus. It's not all funny like last time, because we paid some Eastern European programmer like $17 in Bitcoin and like 20,000 Bipcoin to fix it. And we didn't have to go to Apple to get approved, so it works. All right, that's it.
I always waited six months to get on board with new technology, and since Bipcoin went away and now it's back, the 6 months starts again now.
It's like when you put a no contact on some relative and say, don't contact me for 6 months, and 5 months in, they send you a Christmas card, and you're like, nope, starting it over.
I put a no contact on new technology.
So. Yeah, there you go.
Anyway.
Okay. Well, when it's worth something, then you can adopt it. How's that?
Yeah, yeah.
When you wish you had a lot of it.
Yeah, when it's really expensive, that's when I'll get involved.
Yeah. Anyway. That's usually how I do it, too.
When Apple gets it.
All right. So anyway, back to the war on drugs. No cartel or police agency left behind. There's a cartoon that you came across, Lisa, and this is probably one of the better cartoons. I mean, it's very wonderful the way that explains what a horrible, evil man Richard Nixon was. And it shows Milton Friedman, who was sometimes horrible and evil, to be right, which he was usually right on a lot of things, but still had some horrible and evil streaks to him because he tried to make government more efficient. And since government exists to make everything ungood, we don't want that to be more efficient. But anyway, let's talk about the cartoon that we have here now.
Sure.
Lisa?
Yeah, it's by an artist named Stuart McMillan. I believe he's from Australia. And I came across this when I was going down an internet rabbit hole looking for a cartoon about Huxley and Orwell. And it's called
Wormholes.
Yeah, Wormholes. Okay. That's better. Wormholes. Yeah, it's called War on Drugs. It does start with a frame about Nixon and how he declared a war on drugs in 1971, and then talks about how criticism of the policy came from Milton Friedman. And he looked to the past, you know, alcohol prohibition, to, you know, kind of decipher what would happen with drug prohibition and the impacts that it would have on the economy and on society. So he talked about how, it, you know, this, when you make things prohibited like this, it causes the black market to, and crime to increase.
Okay, so he predicted these things with amazing accuracy, but did he just pull this rabbit out of his hat? Did he just pull this worm out of his hat and say, hey, this is what's going to happen? Or did he actually look at the history of prohibition, meaning alcohol under the Volstead Act and every other prohibition?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's not the drugs or the alcohol that causes the problems, it's the policy.
It absolutely is, yeah.
And this just say no to government.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying you should do drugs, but just say no to government. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for coming on, Lisa. And thanks for popping in, Michael. For more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com. And for more Lisa, go to nutritionalanarchy.com.
For more me, go to bipcoin.org. Yeah, I had to pop, even if I pop in, I get my, like, you know, I get my Alpha Centauri page just for showing up 5 minutes.
Worms.